Thank you, everybody. Hello, welcome to the class this morning. So we're going to start a new unit this morning on karma. And to prepare for that, we're going to do a short breathing meditation. Then we'll take refuge together and I'll say a couple of prayers and then we'll begin the class. So make yourselves comfortable in your chair, which basically means sit with your back straight and shoulders relaxed. And as you continue to breathe normally and naturally, become aware of the movements that take place within your body as you inhale and exhale. And that's all we need to do. We just keep our attention on the movements and feelings that take place in the body as we inhale and exhale. And if you find that your attention wanders, for instance, to the sounds outside the room, just gently bring it back and become aware once again of the movements taking place within the body and the feelings you experience as you inhale and exhale. So we're placing our attention on the movements and feelings taking place within the body as we inhale and exhale, just to slow everything down, to calm the body and mind, and to be present. We've been breathing mindfully for 3 minutes now, so we'll do it for one more minute. Thank you. have been breathing normally and naturally, which means we are still alive. And being alive, we actually live as human beings. So we have a human life. And it is precious because we can develop many great qualities and rid ourselves of the different factors that produce our suffering. So as a human with the leisure and opportunity to engage in the spiritual path requires of us different types of choices. These choices primarily revolve around suffering and happiness. So we can ask ourselves, do we wish to create the causes for more suffering, or do we wish to create the causes for greater happiness? If we wish to become happier, we need to observe karma and its effects. Doing so will bring happiness in this life and fortunate rebirths in future lives, as well as establishing the foundation for liberation and full awakening. To accomplish any of these goals, let's take refuge together and generate a mind of enlightenment together. So I'll recite the refuge prayers. If you know them, just join in and we'll say it the last time in English. Sangye chanang sakhi chanam bhar janchu badu dagni kapsu chi dagi jin so ke pe sanam ki drala pancha sangye dupasho Sangye chanang sakhi chanam bhar janchu badu dagni kapsu chi dagi jin so ke pe sanam ki drala pancha sangye dupasho. And in English, I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. And to put a good foundation under this wish to become enlightened, we can recite the Four Immeasurables. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Now, to become enlightened, maybe just to be happier, we need to abandon some things and adopt others. And these are all within the seven-minute prayer, so I'll recite that now. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginning this time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own merits, those of all others, to the great enlightenment. So now we come to make the short mandala offering, and the essence of that is to just let go of the clinging that we have to our body and our ideas. I think that in the absence of the clinging, a wonderful pure land appears whereby we can give teachings to others in the future. We're going to offer it to all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas who surround us. So the short mandala. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamiryatayami. I think that you've released the offering. It's been accepted by all the enlightened beings and that they smile at you with delight. And meditate under the bask of this smile, that your mind becomes soft and pliable and open. You feel really good, and you're able to listen to these teachings and participate in the class to the best of your ability, as a means to become fully awakened for the benefit of others. Now breathing in through your nostrils, exhale through your mouth, and just bring your awareness back to the class. So, karma, first class, let's have a look. So we've got an outline here. So this class takes like 10 weeks. We do 8 classes like this one, which will take 8 weeks. We will do a review, and then we will engage in a game called the Game of Liberation, which is a way of bringing all the material together and helping us to understand it in a real sort of easy fashion, easy way. Now, the topics over these 8 weeks will include the general characteristics of karma, virtuous and non-virtuous karma, the weight and strength of karma, projecting and completing karma, and how to purify karma. So we'll come to what karma is very shortly. But these are the books that I've been relying on to put this course material together for these classes. So the two books I've used primarily are these very top ones, The Foundations of Buddhist Practice and Buddhism, One Teacher, Many Traditions, and they're both written by the Dalai Lama and Venerable Thupten Chodron. They're very easy to read, but they are in depth, that's for sure. They cover like everything. The other book I've primarily relied upon is on the bottom here called Science and Philosophy. It's looking from where you are on the right, the furthest on the right, on the bottom. That's not so easy to get your head around, but it is very precise, concise, and deep. The book next to it called What It Is, Karma, and What It Isn't, Why It Matters. That's terrific, because it's got a whole history of the development of this idea of karma throughout India. And Trailing Rinpoche had a great background in Western psychology. So it presents it really from a psychological point of view. Meditation on Emptiness has got a good section on karma and its causes, except it's very deep too, and it's got a sort of dry writing style. So it's there, it's good, but it might not appeal to you so much. Very technical. Very much like Science and Philosophy, very technical. And finally, we've got the Four Noble Truths, and that's very easy read. And like I said, I've used all of them, and they're all useful. They've each got something that you can take or use for yourself. So now something from the book called Foundation of Buddhist Practice. Obviously, this is from His Holiness the Dalai Lama and Venerable Thupten Chodron. And he says here that we can see the specific causes of many external things. However, if we search for the causes of those causes, and then the causes of those causes, we'll end up going back to the origin of the universe. And we do that, we'll be unable to pinpoint precisely each cause and condition. Although the details of all the causes of the Big Bang are too vast and complex for us to understand at present, we would not feel right saying that the universe arose without causes. We know that the development of the universe follows laws of nature, certain systematic ways of growth and decay, even though we might not be able to discern each unique cause and condition. So we know that in general, don't we, that this universe was produced, we've got the primary cause being the Big Bang, so many billion years have gone by, the Earth is here now, and then finally we've got human beings on it. So that's all causes, conditions, bringing about effects. And that's in the external world. His Holiness goes on to say that similarly, on the internal level, sentient beings, meaning us, experiences of happiness and suffering also arise from preceding causes and conditions. Secular society usually traces these to genetic or environmental factors and does not consider the law of karma and its effects. Bringing in the ethical dimension of our mental intentions gives us a fuller picture of both sentient beings' experiences and the environment they inhabit. Now, this book on the bottom, Science and Philosophy, the Physical World, that's got a terrific presentation of the arising of this world we live in. It's quite a bit different than the Big Bang Theory, but it shows you how the mind is involved in it. So it's a little bit different. You know, in the West presentations, it's like this, the world comes out, there's no humans there for a long time, and then gradually the humans come. And then if you go, and they have consciousness, where the consciousness come from, it's from the brain. So the Buddhist presentation is not like that. And I said this particular book, The Science and Philosophy in the Indian Buddhist Classics, The Physical World, presents good material like that. Anyway, let's move on. Look at some of today's outcomes. So, we're going to look at what the word karma means in English, and I'll also give you the definition of it from the Indian sources. We're going to look at actions of intention and also intended actions, because generally the word karma just means action. For people who don't know much about karma, if they ever bring it up, they'll always talk about karma in terms of the result. So something bad happens and we go, yeah, it's real bad karma. And it's true that karma, the word karma does refer to the result, but when we talk about it from a Buddhist perspective, we're really talking about the cause. It's the cause that's the most important thing. If we can stop the causes for unhappiness, we stop unhappiness. But if we can develop the causes for happiness, we can become happy. So it's the cause that's a really important thing, even though result is also included, and also our potentials. And we're also going to look at why karma is so important. So it's, we're going to identify what karma is, we're going to look at intentions, and what we're going to primarily focus on today is what they call substantial and cooperative causes. So there are many different types of causality. There's biological causality, chemical causality, psychological causality, many different types. And the law of karma and its effects is one of the types of causality. Now, karma literally means action. And it's what it's referring to is sentient beings. So we are sentient beings, the being with consciousness. So karma literally means action and refers to a person's intentional physical, verbal, and mental actions. So karma is an instance of the general law of causality, and karma enters the picture when our feelings become involved. So like whatever feelings, if you have a feeling that you can experience, you can know karma plays an effect on that feeling. So karma being a type of action that refers to an intentional action that we can carry out physically, verbally, or mentally. So actions matter because they influence not just ourselves, but others also. And they bring about the experiences in this life and in other lives. So the result of any action really depends upon the intention that drives the action. And so this is why calm is really important. We look at it from the causal point of view. It's why am I doing something? What intention am I bringing to the action?
And surely you must be talking about subconscious intention, not conscious
intention. No, I'm talking about conscious intention. Consciously intending to do something.
But what I mean is that...
So there are a lot of intentions we are not aware of, we're not conscious of.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So that thing of like, that we're not like necessarily going, I choose.
Well, we want to be doing that. We want to be saying, I choose to do this. This is why I'm going to do this. This is why I am doing this.
So one of those feelings from the Buddhist point of view, the indifference, for instance, and then often if we're acting under indifference to others, we're not very mindful of what we're doing, but we're still getting calm.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
So the excuse of, well, I didn't know I was doing something bad is not an acceptable.
No, because you could do something out of ignorance, because you don't know why you're doing something. But that's still a karma, but it's tainted with ignorance. Yeah. And like indifference is one too. Like you could act indifferently. It's a karmic action. You don't care about what you're doing, but that's what's driving your action. You don't care. You still act. So one of the things I like to... You remind us that not everything is karma. All, you know, causality, anything that's cause doesn't necessarily is karma. So I'll give you a couple of instances. So the process of cause and effect in the natural world is not karma. So I'll give you an instance of something taking place in the natural world.
A thunderstorm.
That's not karma. Right. The rain falling down, that's not karma. When the rain falls down, it's just cause and effect. When it lands on your head and you don't like it, that's karma.
Right.
Your feelings got involved. Now we've got karma.
There's a person involved.
There's a person involved, there's a mind involved. Now we've got
like
karma.
If you got hit by lightning in the thunderstorm, that's your karma. But lightning is not karma.
No, that's right. Just happened. Yeah. You could say at the ending of your life would be an effect of karma. So the process of cause and effect of the natural world is not karma. It's not karmic cause and effect.
So if you stack it.
Sorry?
If you fall over, that's gravity. But if you bring meaning to it, it's...
Now when you hit the ground and you hurt, that's an effect of karma.
Right.
It's a result of karma, the fact that you are hurt. But not all...
So like if a stone fell down, a stone wouldn't get hurt, so it's not karma.
It's not karma.
Gravity.
Yeah. So another thing, so you know, we are conscious beings. We have a mind and it's made up of all these mental moments. One cause effect. So this continuum of consciousness that we have as human beings is also not karma. It's not an effect of karma either. It's just cause and effect. And the other thing that's not karma is, so we talk about the Big Bang. Right? So one of the questions that should arise for you would be, well, what produced it? What made it go like bang? So we find something that goes before the Big Bang. Right? So, and then, you know, then this thing called matter appears in our world. So that also is not karma. It's just cause and effect. So this unending process of the continuity of both matter and mind, they are not karma. They are cause and effect. So what is karma? It's basically like this, an action. But the principal meaning of it of karma is the volitional action. So what's volitional action? It's a physical, verbal, or mental action done with intention. So volition, you stand to go intention. It's an intended action. Intentions that are brought to the to your actions. Now, like I said before, strictly speaking, karma refers to the cause of the action. So it's not the intention. Right? You have an intention and you act on it. That intention is the karma. That's what we primarily refer to karma. However, it's also the imprint made on the mind from actions which are motivated by delusions. So the imprint is what links the action to its eventual result at some time in the future. When you get the eventual result at some time in the future, that's also called karma. And that's what, like I said, normal people, the ordinary people in the world that don't know much about it, that's what they think karma is, not the effect. But like I'm saying, to have this effect, is you have an imprint on the mind from a previous action. That imprint's called karma. The motivation for driving, that's also called karma. The primary one we really want to be interested in is what's driving the intention, because that we can play a major part in that, and then the imprint will be virtuous if the driving factor is virtuous, and the result becomes virtuous. If it was an action out of delusion, it leaves an imprint on the mind, it's delusion, and the result will be suffering. Now, sometimes people say, look, I just don't believe in karma. Sorry.
I don't like the sound of that. I don't believe in it.
Yeah, it was karma. Like, you know, you sort of get your head around this and go, my God, I'm responsible for my happiness and my suffering. It's or, you know, the mind is. So, as a natural process that functions, whether a person believes in it or not, the law of karma and its effects is not created by the Buddha. Nor does the Buddha judge people according to their actions and punish or reward them. When someone suffers from an illness in which his unwholesome karma plays a causal role, along with many other factors, it does not mean that that person deserves to suffer, or that he or she made themselves sick. So, nor should we ignore those who are injured or oppressed by unjust social structures, thinking that helping them would interfere with their karma. This is a really poor excuse for a lack of compassion. And for those people holding such attitudes, they actually create destructive karma for themselves. Do you have anything you'd like to say, anything you'd like to ask on this little short section, as we'll move after this into another little section about these actions?
That they didn't deserve it.
That's right, they don't deserve to suffer, or that they actually, or that because he made himself sick, right, that's his business. If you're sick, you made yourself sick. That's karma.
That's like victim blaming.
yeah, you're responsible for that.
So people often say that to dismiss others, to protect their own emotional response.
Yeah, the discomfort that somebody else has suffered. So, well, yeah, you did it.
Yeah.
You take care of it. Okay, so now we're going to go on to have a little look again at. So if you think about it, you might have an intention to do an action, right? And then so that's it's before you've actually acted. You want to do something, and you're going to do something, and then you act on that intention. Right? So while you're acting, there's another intention going on while you're acting. So sometimes you might, if you look back over your life, you might think, oh, I want I want to do this, and you've got a good reason to do it. But then when you actually do it, you've got a different reason. Right? Your intention has changed. So this is what we're going to look at. This is what they call the intention itself, and then the intended actions, or the intended karma. So intended and intention and intended karma. So karma is created in the, so here we're looking at negative karma, right? Because there is also a positive karma. So karma is created in dependence on delusion as either the karma of intention. So here we have this intention as a mental factor, and it's thinking about an activity that it's going to engage in. So what do you think this bloke's going to, what's his intention here?
Smash the lock.
His intention, what do you think? It's going to... And what do you think he might want to do that? So yeah, that's right, he might be going, oh, I've got to chop some firewood to keep my family warm. So the thing with the deepest intention is not just to chop the wood, but it's to provide warmth for my family. That's why I'm out here chopping wood. Right, so you can see the number of intentions. So I want to keep my family warm. Oh, that means I need to go and chop some wood. So I intend to chop some wood. And then when he actually chops the wood as he's going through it, there'd be some intention there to make sure there's a good, I cut this log properly, I strike it right, I need it to be this large, da da da. So we've got other intentions coming into play. Yeah, so one of the word karma is usually used in relation to cyclic existence. So cyclic existence in general is suffering. So whether you do good actions or bad actions, you're still within cyclic existence and you still suffer. So even the good actions that you do are tinged with the delusion. But that's why we still should do good actions, even though they're tinged with delusion. It takes a bit of work to get rid of a delusion. So we've just got to keep on doing the good work, but that good work often still keeps you in cyclic existence. But there is things you can do to make sure that's not the case. And that's why when you act, you should be acting with the intention of renunciation or bodhicitta. Because that brings a different effect on the action. But most people don't do that. They're just acting to be happy in this life. Like I said, this bloke's chopping wood to provide warmth for himself and his family. And so that is concerned just about this life. And then you've got cyclic existence and you've got all the problems that come with it. But it's still a good intention it's a compassionate and loving intention to provide warmth for the family. So the Buddha said in one of his sutras, it is intention, bhikshus, a bhikshu is a monk, it is intention, the bhikshus, that I call karma. For having willed, one acts by body, speech, or mind. All karmic paths originate with the mind. So this is quite different than what the presentations of karma were before in India. And so people often think of karma as not just as the act itself, the physical, the verbal, the mental act itself. And I said, if you have a look at Trailing Rinpoche's book, What Karma Is and Isn't, that gives you this great idea of, wow, like it was not just set like that. It was a progression of thought and so forth. And the Buddha came along and went, actually, it's intention. Now, not every instance of the mental factor of intention creates karma, but intention is always necessary for the creation of karma. Mental factors such as anger, attachment, and love also play a role in the creation of karma. So while karma may be physical, verbal, or mental, all actions can be traced back to an intention in our mind. His Holiness says, our body and our mouth do not move on their own. They act spurred by an intention in our mind. And I'd suggest to you that most of us aren't even aware of the intentions. And this idea of talking about karma is to try to become aware before you act, so that you can bring to the act a good intention, because we do want to be happy. So the mind is the root of all our actions and the source of the happiness and suffering that result from them. When we carefully observe our own experiences, we will see how true this is. Okay, so now a bit about causation itself. So there are three common characteristics of all systems of causality. So whether it's karmic causality or causality in the world, three common characteristics. First is, effects arise from causes and cannot arise without causes. So here I've got a picture of a tree. So I'll be saying here, looking at that, in other words, you could say, well, a tree, it's an effect. It must have a cause. If it didn't have a cause, we wouldn't have a tree. What would the cause of a tree be, maybe? Yeah, a seed for that particular tree, isn't it? That's the cause, we get the tree. Secondly, causes are impermanent. Now, what does that mean in terms of the tree?
Well, the seed goes on the tree.
That's right. When there's a tree there, there's no seed there. The seed of the tree vanishes, and then we have the tree. The seed stops, and you know, we get the tree. And thirdly, effects must be concordant with their causes. So what would that mean here in terms of the pine trees we're looking at? So we've already discerned what the cause is. What's the cause of a pine tree?
Pine seed.
Pine seed, isn't it? Yeah. You put the pine seed in the ground, over time it grows into what?
A pine tree.
A pine tree, right? So they're concordant. Now, if we had some chili seeds and we put them in the ground, are we going to get a pine tree? No, because we'd show other causes are not concordant there.
What if we really, really, really wanted a pine tree?
Yes, well, it's like really, really, really wanted to win the lottery, but I haven't bought a ticket. Isn't it?
I'm that person.
Yeah, that's right. I really, really want to be happy, but I actually haven't done anything to bring it about. I really hate my suffering, but I've done anything to stop it. So we take these, you know, so what he's done, I think the Buddha sort of looked out in the external world and said, okay, this is very similar to what goes on in the internal world of the mind. You know, it's like that sort of thing, isn't it? So I want to be happy, and I'm really sad. And I said, so what are you doing about it? Well, I really don't like people. I'm really grumpy. I tell you about all the things that drive me sad. Yeah, what are you trying to do to be happy? Because you need to do something else, isn't it? Because happiness and sadness are two different mental states. So if you want the effect of one, you've got to put the cause in. And you can never get that effect. You can never be happy without a cause for it. This is what this sort of thing is demonstrating. And that this is actually true, isn't it? Because, you know, if you go after the psychologist or you talk to your friends and you're really unhappy, they'll encourage you to do something about it, don't they? And they'll often talk to you a bit and ask you, so what's been happening? And if you're sad, you'll tell them about your sadness. And then they'll listen to you. And I hope they won't suggest to just keep doing it to be happy, because it won't work, will it? So these are like this. This always works for any system of causation, whether it's internal or external. This is how it works. And now I bring a quote. So where it says where it exists, then that arises, and when it changes, that changes as well. This is referred to as the cause. So Buddhist texts speak in terms of twofold notions of causes and conditions. So there are contexts in which one speaks of the cause of a specific phenomena. It has to be understood as the primary agent that produces it. Like, for instance, pine seed, pine tree. When that happens, the seed, as we just said, it disappears, doesn't it? But through its disappearance arises a pine tree. If you look at that pine tree and go back to look for the seed's not there, is it? It's gone. What actually happened there? What do you think happened?
Incorporated.
So if you look at, like for instance, Helen, if you watch a seed, right, sometimes they do it in biology classes, don't they? They'll put it down in their water, and then you see the seed starts to change. Like it becomes this little sprout come out, and then over time, like the seed completely like vanishes. You've got a whole root system, and the seed's no longer there. And then you've got a little stem coming up. And then over the years, it keeps just changing, doesn't it? And then gradually we get this thing called the tree. So that process of change where the cause becomes the result, the seed becomes the tree, that cause is called a substantial cause. It's the substance that brings about this result. So we've got now a substantial cause. These are the causes we're really interested in as Buddhist practitioners. Because if we are angry, that's an effect. Right? Now you're going to go, okay, that's got to have a cause. That cause has got to be something like the effect. It's got to be something that changed into that effect. What might that be? We need to find what those things are.
Oh, so turned into or changed into.
Yeah, this is that. Right. Yeah, and it's got to be like a similar type.
So then it's got to be a seed of anger or the equivalent of a seed of anger.
That's right, which will produce an angry person. So we call that's what they call them, the seeds of anger. That's they call the karma. There's different types of seeds. Since I come, like we've got different types of seeds. So one of them is karma, which is going to produce this effect. Now, with the example of the tree, we know we need a seed of the type of the tree. That will change into that tree, substantial cause. Right? What else does that tree need? Water, anything else? Sunlight, that's right. Something nutritious, needs all these other things, don't they? So those other things are called the conditions. Now, what's the difference between all those other things and the seed? What's the major difference you can think of? So the water and the tree and the sunlight never turn into the tree. But the seed does. If it's supported by the conditions, because if you just have the seed and you put it in a jar in the cupboard, it won't turn into a tree. So the seed has to be supported by conditions. The cause has to be supported by conditions. Without the conditions, the cause won't ripen, won't produce its effect. So some of the conditions, like I said, we talk about karma, we've brought an intention, then we've acted, then the act stops. That stopping of the action is also called a seed of a karma. What's required for it to flourish? Conditions. What are the conditions that will support its flourishing? Mental factors. You've got to bring your mind into it. Mental factors, and suddenly you get an effect. So when I read the stuff that I'm talking to you, man, this is a pretty in-depth psychology, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really like, because man, Buddhism is about psychology.
But we do see that in play
when if you wake up in a bad mood, then you're more likely to notice everything that goes wrong that day and get worse and worse throughout the day, because your mental conditions kind of ripen all of the things to go wrong.
Then taint your view.
Taint your view, yeah.
Certainly does that. So now so we use language and words to describe things, right? So in the Tibetan tradition, I'm not sure if it's in the case of the Pali, but certainly the Tibetan, the word that they use is the same for cause and condition. Condition is just another form of cause. Because any condition can become a cause. And what we call causes can also become conditions. Like, for instance, yeah, we talked about this, do tomatoes grow from tomato seeds? They do, don't they?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's say we've got this tomato seed. It's going to be a substantial cause for the tomato plant. Right? So the seed will turn into the plant. We call this tomato seed a cause for a tomato plant. Could the seed also be a condition?
Right.
Yep, that's right, that's right. It could be a nutrient factor for soil. It could be food for a bird. Well, so the seed won't turn into a bird, but it's a condition to alleviate the hunger of the bird.
Right, yeah. So it could be a cause for one thing, but a condition,
For another.
Else.
That's dead right. And this is always the case with these phenomena. So I want to bring that to your attention, because what naturally happens to our mind is when we see often things as being causes, we think that's all they are. This is only a cause. In fact, like I said, they're not. Like I said, so a seed of a tomato plant is a substantial cause for the tomato plant, but it's a condition for the welfare of a bird, or perhaps for the nutrients of the soil. If the seed just rots, it doesn't turn into a plant, something else happens to it. It becomes a condition for the rich soil. So in general, causes and conditions are equivalent. However, when you talk about like one particular thing, then it's not the case. Now, like I said, if you're talking about the tree, then the seed is the substantial cause for it. It's not the condition, it's a substantial cause. So conditions refers to the cooperative causes that are shared with others. Okay, so it's a little bit more on substantial causes. So we define a substantial cause. There's a couple of definitions. I put this one up, which is that which primarily produces the essential nature of its effect, as opposed to the attributes of the effect. So you might be wondering, what does it mean, as opposed to the attributes of the effect? Right, so I've got this example here. As you can see, we've got a seed. You put it in the ground, it'll actually change, won't it? You know, it germinates, it'll sprout, seedling, tree. So the seed produces the tree. The seed is a substantial cause for the tree. However, this tree has a number of branches on it, a number of leaves on it. It's so high, it might be so wide. Those are contributory causes.
Or contributory effects.
Effects. Contributory effect, rather.
Sun and water and everything.
That's right.
Okay, so how the tree actually turns out.
That's right.
Is quite individual from tree to tree.
That's right. And there we have the contributory effect. What's affecting that? You say, well, the sunlight, the type of soil, all sorts of different things like that. not the conditioning factor. So like we say, like, you'll always get that type of tree, that's for sure.
Whether it flourishes.
Whether it flourishes, a tall tree, a short tree, a damaged tree, all sorts of different things. That's all up to the contributory causes. So, you know, like, for instance, if we come back now to human beings, for instance, like, all of us are here because that, like our mum and dad had sex and then we were born. So it's always the case, isn't it, that if the sperm and the egg come together and it's nourished right, you get a human being if it's two humans that have made out. That always happens, doesn't it? But then look at us, here we are, we're all human beings, but we're all different too. What's that down to? This contributory causes. What's contributing? So in the physical, we could look at that, and then it's the same sort of thing of, in terms of the effects that come about through karma and the afflictions or the positive mental factors.
So then how we experience difficulties is also quite individual.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so a lot of that are contributory conditions, contributory causes. You know, so for all of us, you know, we all have the potential, don't we, to become happier people. We all have the potential to develop more kindness, more compassion. Yet many of us don't, or there are differences. So that's contributory. What contributes to that? Is, you could say, more learning, for instance, a good teacher, a good group of people surrounding us and supporting us, a good building to do it. But there's all contributory causes. No, you just say that the sea is a contributory cause for the death of the bird.
Yes, it's a condition on one level because it helps for the plant to grow and then it keeps the bird full. There.
Yeah.
So if the bird eats the seed and then dies, chokes, then is the seed then the cause of the bird dying and not the condition of the bird?
No, it's a contributory cause for its death.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's a cause for its death.
Yeah, a contributory cause.
Okay, can you
explain contributory? Okay, so why is it not a substantial cause? Why is the seed not the substantial cause of the bird's death?
Because birth is the substantial cause.
Because the seed doesn't turn into the bird.
Yeah.
Oh.
Seed.
So actually the
seed doesn't, yeah.
The substantial cause would be more to do with what the bird breathed in the seed.
So what would the choking be then, if it choked and died?
This is contributory.
That's contributory. The cause.
Sorry?
I thought the choking on the seed.
Yeah, it's a contributory cause.
Still contributory.
Yeah, that will contribute to the death of the bird.
I mean,
so a substantial cause has to turn into the effect. Does a seed swallowed turn into death?
No.
So it can't be a substantial cause. It's always contributory causes. So contributory causes are pretty easy to find. They're everywhere. The substantial cause is a bit different. You've got to sort of like, you know, you've got to look at the effect first and then go back and go, okay.
Every time?
Sorry?
Would it be true every time? Is that?
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. So for a substantial cause would be that if you said the seed was the substantial cause of the bird's death, then it would have to kill all birds.
That's right, every bird. That's right. And all deaths of all birds are because of these seeds. But that's not the case. So I'd like to say the simple thing to remember, because it is quite simple, if you just nut it down and then try and bring up all your examples, is go substantial causes turn into the effect.
Yes.
And every other things don't. they contribute to the effect.
So Denny said also here online that because logically not every seed swallowed by birds causes death.
That's right. That contributes.
So that's actually something quite different from our normal everyday culture, which is to call all the contributing causes the main cause.
That's right. Okay. And this is what, you know, the sloppy... Not sloppy thinking. Oh. We just haven't been introduced to the concepts and be quite...
We haven't refined our thinking enough.
No, that's right. So we just use like cause in general. Like, you know, so then we get this thing here. So what's important about this is when somebody says something to you and you become angry and you say, what happened today? No, no, I said this and caused me to really lose my mind. No, that's a condition. So not leave trigger out for the moment. Just go, we're just talking about causes. Because no, when she said these words, they contributed to me becoming upset. But they're not just like those words and that person never turned into my upset. So they contributed to cause. They cannot be the substantial cause. Yet, when we talk like this, we take them to be the substantial cause. We mean you. You did this to me. You are responsible for my unhappiness.
So that's really, it's founded on a mistake. And so then on based on that mistake, then you think, okay, now I've got to get rid of you,
yeah,
and then I'll be happy.
That's right, we make another mistake. So we keep looking like, rather, and this is the important thing here, is so anything external to us in terms of our happiness and suffering is always a contributory cause. But why? Why? Why is it a contributory cause?
Because it never becomes us.
It never turns into our suffering or our happiness. It never does that. So people and their, like I said, anything that seems to be coming from external, from out in the world, coming at us, is not the primary cause of our happiness or suffering. They contribute to it, yes, but they're not the primary cause. This is super important, and it's probably the most important thing you'll ever take away from this whole class, maybe even this whole course, is to remember that. So what it'll do is it'll stop you blaming the world for your problems. Anything external to you, it's not the cause of your distress. It contributes, but it's not the major cause of it.
So Debbie said that we often say, well, you made me angry, instead of when you said blah, 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 felt angry, which is something that we try and teach our kids, but we don't really teach ourselves.
Yeah, and as Debbie's saying, and oftentimes we're not actually taught that till after schooling. That's a whole way of, you know, communicating. We're not really taught that, of like how to communicate properly. Okay, so substantial cause, and a bit more about the substantial cause. It's also called the material, the main, or the unique cause. So in terms of the physical world, you know, a seed turns into a flower, or a seed turns into the tree. Mentally, you have frustration turning into anger. Abstract, a minute turns into an hour. Now we come to the so substantial causes can be physical, mental, or abstract. Okay, so I give an example of instance, abstract, minutes to hours, a mental, this is the important one. We've got, you know, another term for, you know, we'll come to later, karma, that's also called karmic seed, because it's a potential to bring about something, potential to bring about an activity of some sort. Yeah, but it needs conditions to do it. And those conditions, for instance, could be like frustration, distraction.
So is that also why we can get caught unawares because we don't know we have the seeds and we think we're all fine. And then something like the pandemic comes along and, you know, we're surprised at our behaviour or our response.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we just sort of haven't been introduced to this material, I guess. And the way the world sort of in general works is that there's stuff out there making us unhappy. There's stuff out there that'll make us happy. But we just need to get those things. But what you'll find is, of course, over time, is that you find it's untrue. You can have those things and then you find that you're not actually happy. Or your happiness is okay for a little while, and then it starts diminishing again. And you often think it's caused by that thing no longer giving you what you required or giving you things you didn't want. What I'm trying to tell you and hope you'll get is that, no, that's not the case. That contributes, but it's not the cause. The cause is back here.
That would be like if the tree came out of the seed and then after a while it just shrank back in again. You know, it just doesn't happen. So if our happiness actually came from outside, then it would have to just continue to grow, wouldn't it? What a treat.
Yeah, well, it's one of the things, and that's, you know, you find that it doesn't do that. Yeah, so you know, okay, that's not the case. So now there's defining causes. Sorry, defining operative causes. So here we've got this strawberry plant. It had seeds, it's brought up. And here we've got all these different defined, these cooperative causes. We've got the sun shining, we've got the earth, we've got minerals, water, carbon dioxide, oxygen, all of these things contribute. But they're not the major cause of this strawberry plant. So we've got, like, for instance, we've got the air around us, we have friends, we've got clothing, all these things contribute to our happiness and well-being.
So that's quite a subtle distinction, because like with the air, if we didn't have oxygen, we'd die, but we'd never in our mind say, oxygen is the cause of my life.
That's a contributory cause. It contributes to my life.
It's essential, but it's not.
Yeah, it's not the substantial cause.
Can I just double check, is cooperative causes and contributory causes, is that just two words to mean the same thing?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So yeah, cooperative causes, and conditioning, conditions are basically the same thing. They're just
what I think I've interpreted is it's substantial causes if we're talking about a person and our emotions and our actions or whatever. The substantial cause comes from within. But the cooperative or the contributory causes are things that are external.
No, not necessarily. In terms of the mind, it can be both internal, but it can have one internal, one external.
Right. So contributing could also be an internal thing.
Yep. Okay. That's right. Yeah. Once again, that which primarily produces the attributes as opposed to the essential nature of the effect. So that's, I think that's a real good one here, is the attributes. And once again, yeah, the major thing to get here is it does not transform into the result. So one of the things that really struck me many, many years ago when I first started coming to the Buddhist Center, Miffy and I had a disagreement. Well, she didn't know we had a disagreement, but I did. So she asked me to go and put out the rubbish bin, you know? And I just went, why do I have to? I didn't say this. Why do I have to put the rubbish bin out? Right? And got really upset. And then said, you know, in my mind, started to blame her. And then very quickly I went, that's impossible. It's impossible that she could be the cause of my distress. Why? Why is it impossible? That's why she never turned into my distress. She cannot be. And this, and the elves go like, you.
I didn't even know.
Right? So like it can't be, like I said, anything external. They'd have to turn into your distress. But she didn't. So yeah, you know, as soon as I went down, I was like, oh my God, I've been blaming the outside world and being resentful about it for so many years. I just went, I was wrong, you know.
It's the rubbish bins that's the cause.
Yeah, but once again, the rubbish bin didn't turn into my distress. Yeah. So, and I went straight to the tree thing, and I went, oh my God, no, it's just a contribute, you just contributed. But the actual distress must be back here, must be my mind, this not liking, you know, which is a condition, the not liking. I don't like to do this. I don't want to. So these become conditions for an act to be played out. But because I recognized what was going on, I it took me a bit of time to calm down and work it all out. But there was a big change for me after that. I was like, right, okay, you cannot take your frustrations out on people. They're not the cause of your distress. So like I say, if you get this, it makes a huge difference to your behaviours. And it gives you a chance to, imagine if he was the cause of my distress, or the external world were the cause of your distress, what you'd have to do to be happy. And yet people are doing just that, aren't they? Trying to change the external world and people and situations to be happy.
Put me out in the rubbish.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. So Helene's asked, does the word conditional, cooperative, contributory, are they interchangeable?
Yeah, they're all interchangeable. They're all synonyms.
Synonyms, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now, this one, let's have a look. So here, this is from Dharmakirti. He says, the effects arising from the cooperative causes reside together with them, just like fire and molten copper. So I've got a picture of the fire and the molten copper here, and then I've got a person over here, because we're going to see how this analogy of the fire and the copper, how they can relate to a person in terms of their cooperative causes. So the body and the mind, body and consciousness, reside together, each with its own distinctive substantial causes. Yeah? So remember about the thing. So why is the mind, if the brain were the substantial cause of the mind, what would have to happen? The physical brain would actually turn into something non-physical.
Turn into
the mind. Does that happen? It doesn't. There's no evidence of that ever happening. Yet that's the major way of neuroscience and breath presenting it, that our brain produces our mind. The mind is an effect of the brain.
Or an expression.
Can't be a substantial effect. The brain, no. Right? Go the other way. Do minds turn into physical matter? Do you know, this is the fact that I wish to have $1 million and imagine it turn into $1 million? Never. Mental, physical stuff doesn't turn into mental stuff. Mental stuff doesn't turn into physical stuff. That's what's showing you hereby substantial causes, contributory causes. That doesn't happen.
But
are they two, do they support one another? Are they together? You betcha.
So it's like because we've put them so close to, together, we think they're the same. It's like two people in a room and saying they're the same thing.
Yeah. Well, there are reasons for the, we can say, why science actually goes, no, brains produce mind. It's called materialism. You can't measure anything that's not material in science. So you just deal with the material. So everything is material from that point of view. And so the mind has to be material, which means the brain has to turn into mind. But there's no evidence of that. It's just an idea. It's one of the faults. Now, why do they do that? Why do they make it one thing? Because there's a big problem if they're two distinct things. I said, how do they relate if they're completely distinct? How does a mind and a body relate if they're two completely different entities? You say, well, they can't. So this is the old example that the church gave. There's a soul and there's a body, and they're distinct. So it's going on going, no. But then that's just like our mind and body. They're not, that's the same problem, distinct, two different things. They go, no, we're not going to have that. It's got to be one thing. Then you've got these other problems, right? I'm going, well, that means brain's got to turn into mind. That's a big problem. Yeah, no. So that's never been sorted out. It's just an idea. So here what we're talking about, they're not completely distinct like this. They cooperate with one another. Like we know that our mind can affect our body. We also know our body can affect our mind. Right? So they don't have to be the same thing, and they don't need to be completely independent and distinct from one another. Inherently distinct, inherently different. Right? So they're not either of those two positions yet. That's the Western argument. That's right. If your body doesn't have a mind, you're dead. That's what you call it, right? This person's dead. Right? So, but there is, say, we have this relationship then between the physical and the mental. But the substantial causes for each of them are different.
So, with the body and the mind, so our Western kind of popular idea is that consciousness is like a byproduct. It's of the brain.
That's right. But
it doesn't even stand up to reasoning because you know those old fashioned experiments where you get a dead frog and then you put the electrodes and have an electric current going through it and it would move, but you wouldn't say now it's alive. So if all of that electrical activity in our brain is just a byproduct of our brain, then theoretically you get a dead brain and put electrodes in it and then it's alive. But they do that and it's not alive. They can't make it go alive. That's just the stuff of fancy. But that's our culture.
Like being plugged in and pulling the plug. Like when my friend died, I was like, isn't that euthanasia? How can you do this sort of thing? But like then explaining that, no, she's already gone.
So the
power, the energy going through is not.
So it's our Western kind of approach is very contradictory.
Yeah, it's not as rational as you'd like it to be or think it is. So here was this example of the fire and the copper. So is copper fire?
No.
No. You got lots of copper piping all over the place. There's copper. Is that a fire? No, it's not. Is fire copper? No, it's not. Yet we've got fire and copper together. As you can see here, this thing is pouring down. That's like fiery copper on fire. And you can't distinguish each one from the other. that stream is on fire and it's copper. Does fire produce copper?
No.
No. So because continuum is different, isn't it? Substantial cause is different. Does copper produce fire? No.
Or our
copper
would be in trouble.
That's right. That's right. We're supposed to burn down. So they're two distinct continuums. Are they affecting one another? You have to say, yeah, they are. So even like in the physical world, here we've got this thing, you know, two different phenomena, fire and copper. Two different causes, yet they contribute to one another. For the copper to be molten, you need the fire. So they're like that, and yet we're here, we are, it's the same thing with consciousness in the body. Consciousness is a contributory cause for the body. The body is a contributory cause for consciousness. Both of them, neither of them are substantial causes of the other. So one thing I'd like you to take away from this is you cannot have a consciousness without a physical support for it. It is impossible. You don't have this consciousness out there floating around with no physical support. It's impossible. So we'll come to this later on, but the physical support for consciousness is in Buddhism called wind. It has the mind so that it can move. In our culture, we call it energy, very, very subtle energy, not of a physical type, but it allows the mind to go from here to there, to go from one object to another object. So it moves. Mind is just something that knows its object, clear and knowing, that's it. It's got nothing about wind or movement or anything like that in its definition. But we do know the mind can move from one object to another. So that's a support for the movement. What's the support called? Very, very subtle energy or wind. So there's no mind completely independent, completely separate from anything what we call physical. And so you can see here that one can support the other without actually turning into the other, isn't it?
Yeah, and also the kind of body or brain that we have clearly influences our consciousness.
Yeah, so it supports consciousness. Like, you know, our brain, our nervous system supports your visual consciousness, your auditory consciousness, even your ability to think, all that stuff. So, yeah, that's all supported by the body. The body contributes to the functioning of your consciousness. That's true, isn't it? You know, like, you know, we've got eyes. Of course, if they were blinded, we would not have visual consciousness. But our eyes don't turn into visual consciousness. And visual consciousness doesn't turn into our eyes. But our eyes support, they contribute to us being able to see, and our brain and our nervous system, all that.
See, now that you say that, it's so clear that to call it a contributory factor, how they support each other, because that has that really nice sweet spot. It's not that they're the same, it's not that they're different. They support each other.
Yeah, they support each other. They contribute to one another.
Can you think of any other examples of like physical and non-physical? Like, just my friend, she's really onto this, like very difficult to convince her of the possibility that brain is not mind. I'm thinking, are there other things that exist like that? Like, would you say electricity or like a light globe is the physical and the light is the non-tangible effect, or is that
because that's all can be measured. Light can all be measured. You're just dealing in the physical realm there.
Okay.
So when Buddhism divides phenomena up, they've got three divisions. One is everything, you know, what they call a form, meaning just basically anything physical, material. So physical here meaning like atomic from physics.
Or light waves or sound waves.
Yeah, so anything like that, right? Stuff that can be measured by the way we do things. So that's that part called Buddhism form. However, there are some forms that are not quite like that, but leave that aside for the moment. The other stuff is the mental. So the mental stuff is not physical, it's not material. So straight off, you've got a problem with our way of science at the moment, don't you? You can't measure mind, you can't measure consciousness.
And if you say that the mind is just the effect of electrical signals in the brain, then you have to go, well, what about an electrical signal out of the power pole there? Does that mean that's mind? Does that mean the electrical signal on the power point, on the power pole experiences happiness or depression? Does it? So once you start kind of taking the what ifs, it doesn't stack up at all.
Yeah, I'll bring something spiritual up in our mind class. So we start a couple of weeks' time, we need to talk about this. The other thing, so I've got these two categories, the material or the form, we've got consciousness. And the other category is phenomena that are not either of those two. They're something different. In there would go things like time, the person, karma.
What was the second one? The person.
Yeah. So this is how we can look at things and talk about it. Anyway, the thing is that here's an analogy. So we can have things being contributory causes and substantial causes. We know what the differences are. So from non-virtues come all sufferings, and likewise all bad transmigrations. From virtues, all happy transmigrations and the pleasures of all our lives. So everything that we've been talking about is to support this idea, and you come back from him, you can go back. If you're looking for any, like suffering, is an effect, a result. What's its cause? Non-virtue, as it says here. Also for these terrible future outcomes. The life is a happy transmigration. In other words, as a human being with a leisure and opportunity to engage in the spiritual path, its major cause has been virtue. It also brings about every pleasure that you have in life. So you've got a substantial cause producing its effects. The substantial cause being virtue. So in relationship to this, His Holiness says, with compassion, the Buddha shared his understanding of karma with us by recommending we abandon certain actions and engage in others. When we put his advice into practice, we become empowered to stop the causes of suffering and create the causes of happiness. And this leads us into why understanding karma is so important. So I've got 3 points here. The first is, it explains how experiences of pain and suffering arise as a result of negative actions, thoughts and behavior. Secondly, it also explains how desirable experiences of happiness and joy arise as a result of positive actions, emotions and thoughts. And sometimes these, in fact, most times it's not very obvious. Right. Lastly, our experiences come from causes and conditions which correspond to their result.
So, Eddie, this takes us back to the very beginning of the class again, where there's that really fine distinction between what we experience as a result of our past actions, but we didn't intend to make ourselves suffer. We didn't do it on purpose.
No, that's right.
Yeah, so I'm just thinking there's this idea of like fault or blame, that like we'll talk about at the beginning, that if you're suffering, well, that's because you made yourself sick, or that's because you deserve to. There's this added kind of layer in there that's...
Yeah, see, this is, so what this is showing is, so you'd be mistaken thinking that. What you've got to say is, though, it is karma and delusion that makes you sick. Because you don't want to be sick, do you? So you wouldn't say, no, I did this to make myself sick. You wouldn't say that. You said, no, karma and delusion have done it. Like this, you know, one of the early things we learn in Buddhism, the first noble truth is, look, you don't have any control. What's got control over you? Karma and delusion. Karma and delusion produce these effects. But you could get control. It's possible for you to get control. If you understand this process and decide to play part of it through your intention, you intend to make a difference, then you make the changes, then it happens.
So our default is we're kind of like out of control actors.
That's right. Yeah.
And so then we can't say, oh, well, it was your fault.
No,
because it wasn't intentional like that.
That's right.
We still experience the result.
That's right. Whether you, yes, so that's to say, whether you believe it or not, you still get the result. You act like this, the result comes. So we start off with going, look, you know, when we say I have no control, I don't think it means you don't have any control whatsoever. That's not true. You lack control over everything. That's true, but you do have some control, don't we? You know, we make decisions, we make choices, that's control. So we have some. Yet we still experience suffering. So yeah, okay, you know, I do, but it's not quite working out right. What's going on? So we try and find out through this cause and effect presentation of the Buddha. So just finish off now. So as Holiness says, when we talk about karma and its effects, it primarily concerns causes created in one life, bringing results in future lives. In both cases, we see that our happiness and suffering are not the effect of an external creator, nor are they causeless. So external creator means here like an idea of a god or some superior being or someone else.
Or causeless is being random.
Random. Some of them happy, some of them sad, I don't know. And we're all like that. So that's also not true. So our happiness and our suffering come about because of our intentions and the actions that follow. Our experience of happiness and suffering is in our own hands. That's great news. So an understanding of karma and its effects will have a direct effect on our choices, decisions, and actions in daily life. We will become more conscientious and mindful. Instead of putting energy into overcoming adversaries and competing with rivals, we will choose to cultivate cooperation, tolerance, and forgiveness. That's the end of our class. Wasn't it a beauty? So karma means action, actions with intention, and actions require causes and conditions. So try to recollect the substantial causes and contributory causes so you don't make these mistakes of blaming something external to you. If you have this book, read pages 3 to 5. Online, it's 3 to 5 in the FPMT notes. Next week, we're going to be talking about the 4 general characteristics of karma, and we'll look at this analogy of the seed in a bit more depth. So we've come to the end of our class today, so I'll dedicate. So we've created some merit, which means you've actually paid attention, everyone's still awake. You put some energy into this, right? So we want that energy towards just acting in harmony with karma, cause and effect, putting it into our suffering, developing and flourishing perfectly, such way we become fully awakened beings that are able to help others do the same. That's the way this comes about. We dedicate our efforts to that goal. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, everyone.